this isn't just about horsepower.
It's about the culture behind the wheel.
From the latest automotive headlines,
to the machines we love, to the music, movies, and moments driving in the lifestyle.
This is Driveline with Justin Basic. If it's got an engine, an attitude, or a story worth telling, we're on it. Call in. Leave your take. 833-3DL-SHOW. This is Driveline. So let's strap in and let's roll.
Driveline, sort of car show. I'll tell you, I've been beaten up this past week. Try and go on a nice vacation, always come back sick. I don't know, post-nasal drip, cough, the works. So I missed last week's show, but time marches on. Today's the first day. I actually lost my voice completely. Today's the first day I can kind of talk in a while, but got a lot from the past week that we missed out on. To start off, I found something even better this week and bring a trailer than last week's Fort 13 Dodge CHP car. And I'm really mad because I didn't even notice this one until the auction was ending, and I think it had sold for less than it's worth, but I'm absolutely broke right now, and it wasn't meant to be. But try and guess what this is. 1961 V12. So already it's sounding expensive. But like I said, in my typical price range. No, you didn't get it. Bring a trailer. No reserve. 21 years owned, 1961 GMC L7000 twin six fire truck. 5-speed. So let me paint the picture here with the description. This 1961 GMC 7000 series truck was outfitted as a fire engine by Van Pelt Fire Trucks of Oakdale, California, and was previously utilized in California by the fire departments of Rancho Cordova and Lewiston. Purchased by the seller in 2004, truck is powered by a 702 cubic inch twin six V12 paired with a 5-speed manual transmission. Further equipment includes a dually rear axle, 20 inch steel wheels, and a water pump in addition to a pump control station, air horns, spotlights, stand storage compartments. The open cockpit, yeah, it's an open top truck. Of the tilt cab features a driver's seat and passenger side bench. An additional pair of bucket seats are mounted behind the cab. They look like modern SUV seats. Not my cup of tea. I would rip those out immediately. This GMC fire truck is now offered at no reserve with a clean Minnesota title. Location was in Minneapolis. One of many reasons why I couldn't bid on this. So what does a 1961 American V12 fire truck go for? Winning bid. I hate this so much. $3,100. Yeah, that's it. And as far as vintage fire trucks is concerned, for me at least, this is my holy grail. This is the fire truck I wanted since I found out about them a few years ago. Someone else in the greater Corvair community who collects fire trucks has one of these. I just think they're cool. The GMC Twin 6 V12 engine has an interesting story. This is from Motor Trend. Ironically, it came out March 2nd of this year. The surprising story of GMC's Twin 6, Detroit's last production V12 engine. Ask a classic car fan which company built the last production V12 engine to emerge from Detroit, and chances are you'll get Cadillac as an answer. Not a bad guess considering the luxury Marquis offered a 12-cylinder monster of a motor as its top option throughout most of the 1930s, but you might also hear Lincoln, given Caddy's rival stepped up with a V12 engine on its own at the end of World War II, installing it on the Zephyr from 1946 to 1948. The real answer, however, is considerably more obscure, especially if you're not deeply immersed in the world of classic trucks. That's right. It turns out Lincoln's engine wasn't the last mainstream American V12 by a long shot, because decades later, deep in the GMC division of General Motors, a group of eager engineers were breaking out their slide rules in a mad effort to combine two enormous six-cylinder engines together. The unheralded behemoth they created, which became known as the Twin Six, enjoyed all too brief a time in the truck builder's showrooms, but the engine left an indelible mark through its gigantic proportions. The Tyrannosaur torque and bonkers specifications, it also set the tone for two future mega-cylinder monster motors that would appear in the wake nearly 30 years down the line. So basically, General Motors made a brand new V6 engine in 1959, designed specifically to be used in commercial vehicles, pickup trucks, buses, and delivery models, including the Suburban of the area. Featured a 60-degree angle inboard spark mounting, six-throw crankshaft that obliterated the need for balance shafts. The watchwords in GMC marketing at the time underscored how smooth the V6 ran and how easy it was to maintain, two factors intended to appeal to the fleet buyers it was aimed at. As was common in the period, the GMC V6 was available in a bewildering array of displacements, ranging from a modest 305 cubic inch, 5 liters, all the way up to 478, 7.8 liters. Smaller versions of the V6 were found in pickups and Suburbans and retail showrooms, while everything else was installed in commercial models. There was even a version of the 7.8 liter engine that had an additional pair of cylinders grafted to it, making a V8 that pushed a displacement all the way up to 10.4 liters. So if GMC already had access to so many different variations of its V6 and V8 design, why did it feel the need to push into V12 cylinder territory? Well, the answer was likely commercial pressure from companies like Seagrave and American LaFrance, which offered enormous V12 engines in their dedicated truck platforms through the 1950s. Don't forget a time before diesel engines had truly caught on in the American industry. This meant displacement was the easiest way to come up with the kind of torque needed for heavy-duty gasoline applications. What better way to produce gobs of twist as smoothly as possible than by increasing cylinder count? Now, the philosophy behind the Twin Six, which took a pair of 351 cubic inch V6 blocks and used them as the basis for a 12-cylinder block. You could swap more than 50 parts between the humble V6 and its hairy-chested V12 cousin, helping keep both production and maintenance costs reasonable. The Twin Six might have been the last production V12 to emerge from Detroit, but it was not the only engine to result from a mashup of two existing mills. The ultra-rare Cizeta Mororder V16T supercar arrived in 1991 with a 16-cylinder engine that shared more than a few parts with the Lamborghini Arocco V8. In effect, the design sandwiched a pair of flat-crank 8-cylinder Lambo engines together to produce 540 horsepower and 400 foot-pound of torque from 6 liters. More familiar is BMW's V12 engine that arrived at the end of the 1980s, which used both 7-series sedan and 8-series coupe, dubbed the M70. Its design relied on a pair of M20 inline 6-cylinder engines tilted together, swapping out their original cast-iron blocks for an all-aluminum design, including the cylinder heads, and using a single overhead camshaft. So yeah, it was an interesting build. And you go back to the 30s and 40s, and a lot of fire trucks used V12 engines, but as someone who's partial to GMC collecting, I really want one of these fire trucks. So, wasn't meant to be. Hopefully other ones come by. Hopefully a little closer, but it's good to know that they're not worth a lot. speaking of fire trucks, update on Holland Heroes and Lizzie and our little fundraiser we're doing for the LAFD Foundation. Currently, as of Wednesday night, we are sitting at $165 raised out of our $2,000 goal. We are in 35th place with 675 votes needed to be in the top 12, which, as there are 12 months in the year, is required to get us on that calendar. We have basically today's upload day is Thursday, so if you're listening today, get your votes in. Thanks to Maggie and Becca, my cousin Nick. Thanks, brother, for donating already. Let's see what we can do. It all goes to a great cause. It helps LAFD get equipment they need. Provides therapy for the firefighters. High-tech things like robot dogs and bulldozers and stuff that the fire department normally wouldn't be able to afford. Their drone program is funded by LAFD Foundation. And it gets some much-needed new furniture in the stations as well. So, very good cause. Every donation is appreciated. So, something came back in the news today that you'll see. I was all over this one.
Disneyland's Autopia ride is preparing to go fully electric. The resort has an agreement with the California Air Resources Board to retire the Tomorrowland ride's current engines early next year. Right now, work is underway on the design and testing of a fully electric prototype. Disney is the parent company of ABC7.
So, when I heard them talking about this last week, I was like, why are we only talking about this now? This has been known for a while. And I dug into my archives. This is my paper Instagram story archive. From April 19th, 2024, a post from KTLA said, Disney's gas-powered Autopia vehicles to be gone by 2026. To which I said, dibs on a couple when they toss them. So, I didn't even realize how much time elapsed since this story came out, because gone by 2026? We're halfway through 2026, so what's going on here? So, I dug up, this is the original story. This is the original story published by KTLA, April 19th, 2024. Disneyland's gas-powered Autopia vehicles will be gone by 2026. Autopia's gas-powered... Autopia's gas-powered cars will be replaced with electric vehicles at Disneyland come 2026. Which they weren't. The happiest place on Earth shared the news with the Los Angeles Times, who first reported the story earlier this month. Disneyland shared that Autopia, a gas-powered attraction located within Tomorrowland, would be electrified. But it stopped short of sharing when that switch would occur. After news broke, various electric vehicle activists launched a campaign to pressure Disney to commit to EVs, not hybrids, and to phase out gasoline within 2 years. So, it's, yeah, when the story originally came out, they said they were going to add electric to the deal. This was an update. And people were debating whether or not the cars would be all electric or hybrids. And hybrids? How are you going to develop hybrid technology for a go-kart? Whatever. On Friday, Disney announced they are planning to do just that. So, EVs make sense. Small cars have been powered by electric motors and batteries forever. It makes sense. In a statement to the LA Times, a Disney spokesperson shared that electrification means fully electric. It does not mean hybrid or any other version of a gasoline combustion engine. The statement also shared that within the next 30 months, the park will do away with the current engines used in the Autopia vehicles. This means by fall 2026, Disneyland guests will be able to experience an updated version of the famed attraction. So as of today, May 13th, Autopia is still open, so unless these cars are already built and ready to be installed, this is not going to happen this year. Still, Disney didn't share when the electrified version of the attraction would open or when the ride would temporarily close if needed to implement new changes. Last time Autopia underwent a major transformation was in 2016 when Honda became the ride sponsor, according to Disneyland News Today. The classic attraction, popular among young guests, who get to experience driving for the first time, is as old as Disneyland itself, opening with the theme park in 1955. So, I, for one, I have a lot of nostalgia for the gas cars. I like the noise they make. I like the smell they make. But I'm not going to be sad when they are gone from the park, because that gives me an opportunity to own one. But Disneyland wasn't telling us the whole story and why this switch was happening, because the news story that came out May 12th of 2026, Disneyland pays $56,000 settlement for modified Autopia engines. The Anaheim theme park is working on the design, engineering, and testing of a fully electric ride vehicle prototype for the 1955 opening day attraction. Disneyland plans to update Autopia with electric wheels and retire the gas-powered engines on the 1955 opening day Tomorrowland attraction after reaching a settlement with the state agency that regulates air pollution in California. Disneyland paid a $56,000 settlement to the California Air Resources Board in 2024 after disclosing the Honda engines on the Autopia ride vehicles were operating without certified emission controls. Man, the mouse got state reffed. California Air Resources Board fine was the result of administrative oversight that was promptly corrected with no impact to the environment, according to Disneyland officials. In September 2023, Disneyland disclosed to the California Air Resources Board that the Honda go-kart engines on the Autopia ride vehicles had been modified in a way that violated state regulations for small off-road engines. State regulators alleged in February 2024 that Disneyland operated the Honda engines on the Autopia attraction without certified emissions controls. Disneyland voluntarily agreed to pay the $56,000 settlement to resolve the violations without admitting liability. The California Air Resources Board is responsible for protecting the public from harmful effects of air pollution and collect money. Editorial. Disneyland reached an agreement with the Air Resources Board to retire the current Autopia gas-powered engines in early 2027. Disneyland is working on the design, engineering, testing, and flow. Okay. Very redundant article that says the same thing over and over again. I could have just read the first sentence. Disneyland Resort takes seriously its commitment to meet or exceed all applicable air quality requirements, according to Disneyland officials. So they're just doing damage control here. So now that we know the real truth, and that CARB is back at it again, where's Autopia and Leno's Law? Get Senator Sharon Grove on. I vote for we modify Leno's Law again to exempt Autopia from future scrutiny. So it's just funny because this is a California exclusive thing, because no mention has been made. And I did some digging on this, and it's funny because all the Disney YouTubers I follow, no one has talked about this, but there's been no mention from the ride's other park counterparts on any sort of modification. So this is clearly just California damage control. And it's funny because I was looking on the actual theme park websites and the descriptions between the two rides, it's pretty apparent on where they stand. So Disneyland California. Autopia powered by Honda. I think that's out of date. I think it should say Autopia powered by In-N-Out. Put the pedal to the metal on an unforgettable road trip along miniature motorway, fire up the hot rod, cruise the scenic winding roads in this classic attraction in a souped-up coupe. Souped-up is an exaggeration. Pick up the pace as you rumble under a small bridge and see iconic attractions like the Matterhorn in the distance, spot Honda's humanoid robot and bird along the road. Featuring a working gas pedal and steering wheel, each classy chassis seats two adults or three children and navigates curves and inclines just like the real thing. Autopia is the only existing Tomorrowland attraction dating back to Disneyland Park's opening day in 1955. When the cars first took the road, they captured America's fascination with the latest transportation innovation, the freeway. Over the years, the roadways and car styles have been updated, but the fun stays the same. So, yeah. Another iteration of Autopia won't be the worst thing ever, but if they decide to get rid of the space in some sort of ill-conceived Tomorrowland remodel, I'll be upset. A lot of people want to get rid of it, but I'll be upset. So, flying across the country to the great state of Florida, we have the Tomorrowland Speedway in Magic Kingdom Park. Now, this is funny because pay attention to the verbiage here. Put the pedal to the metal in your very own hot rod and cruise along a scenic miniature motorway. That's the same. Driver, start your engine. Here we go. Take the wheel of a gas-powered car and strap yourself in for an exciting and scenic drive. So, it's just funny in Florida. They go out of the way to mention that it's a gas-powered car. But, like I said, it's been my mission for a long, long time to buy an Autopia car. And the retirement of the gas-powered Honda cars could only accelerate that. Unless they decide to just reuse all the old bodies and throw a bunch of Honda go-kart engines in the trash, which I'll also gladly take. So, like, my obsession with buying this, it started the Peterson Museum with whatever exhibit they had in that little art gallery before the Mr. Brainwash exhibit. There was a one of the older Corvette-styled Autopia cars there. So it got me looking. I'm like, man, these are in private ownership. I got to find one of these. So went to the Googles. I searched Autopia car for sale. And I found a few different things. First one that comes up is from Heritage Auctions. Now, Heritage Auctions is probably your best bet to find, let's say, salvaged Disneyland props. The real deal. It's kind of like the J.J. Kane for Disneyland stuff. Bit overpriced. From Auto Week. So I found the listing, but I want to read the Auto Week article that came out in 2022 when this car went up for sale. For sale, Disneyland Autopia car. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride car. There was a few things for sale in this article. Well, let's focus on the Autopia car. These opportunities don't come along very often, so when they do, you have to act. You're telling me. Several items from Disneyland have somehow exited the Magic Kingdom and are available for purchase. A genuine Disneyland Autopia car, a car from Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, a rocket jet from the big spanning ride that centered Tomorrowland. No one likes the rocket jets because the People Mover was way better. Even an original Skyway gondola from the long discontinued Sky Buckets. Heritage Auctions of Dallas is holding the sale online with bidding open to whomever wants to sign up. Heritage used to specialize in rare coins and did sell a 1787 New York-style Brasher doubloon in 2021 for $9.36 million. It also sold John Wayne's beret from the Green Berets for $179,250. Part of a $5.4 million John Wayne sale. Nicolas Cage's Action Comics number one for $2.6 million. And it sold $12 million worth of Neil Armstrong stuff. The Autopia cars were designed by Disneyland Imagineer Bob Gurr, with the front half inspired by a Corvette and the rear by an Opel GT. I mean, they were basically the same car anyway. Compared to that, the Disney stuff is cheap. Bidding on the, quote, park-used original Autopia car is at just $16,500 with 10 days still to go. Nine by the time you read this. Truly one of our favorite pieces of this entire sale, reads the auction catalog. It's an outstanding original Autopia car, used at Disneyland and acquired directly from the park. What makes this particular vehicle so incredibly special that it's believed to be the single Autopia vehicle to ever come to auction with all original components present, including the chassis and tire, with the exception of the engine, which was not allowed to be sold for safety reasons, or smog reasons. Autopia's vehicles were designed by Disney Imagineer Bob Gurr, who reportedly fashioned this generation of the car to have a front end inspired by the Corvette Stingray and the back end by an Opel GT. Classic charm of this should appeal not only to the Disneyland lover, but also the automobile fan. Raising my hand up now. Just imagine how many children and adults have taken this car for a spin on the speedways of Disneyland. We saw three Disneyland Autopia cars at the Pixar Motorama in 2015. They were owned by a guy named Tony Botini, who had converted them to electric power. Maybe they should hire him. Botany not only showed them at the Motorama, he let people drive them around Pixar's jogging track at speed. At the time, we heard Pixar's Mark Walsh own two others himself. So, for the $16,000 with 9 days to go, what did the Autopia car at Heritage Auctions in 2022 sell for? $180,000. Yeah. This item's owner would consider the right offer but isn't actively participating and doesn't respond to most offers. Little feature Heritage Auctions has. If you lose an auction, you can pester the buyer into selling. The current offering that you have to beat is $270,000. So, I am far from this one. But, also in my research, I found this other one. This one sold at RM Sotheby's, which deals more in cars and car enthusiasts are a lot more familiar with. This one is a 1967, or no, this is the one that made its debut. In 1967, the Mark 7 Autopia car made its debut in Fantasyland at Disneyland, California. Gives the same spiel about being designed by Bob Gurr with the Corvette design, Opel GT. But what did this one sell for? $4,600. Not thousand, hundred. So what is the market value of these cars? You got a range from 4,600 to 250,000. Clearly the audiences are different. And I almost have a feeling that this one that sold at Sotheby's was the one I saw at the Peterson because they were the same yellow color. Also in my research for this podcast, I found on Stage 9, which also deals in a lot of park-used Disneyland memorabilia, original 1967 Autopia body, a fantastic piece of Disney history, an original 1967 Mark 7 Autopia body from Disneyland comes from our own personal collection of Disney memorabilia and was verified by Bob Gurr. Car was autographed on the hood by Bob Gurr. Please call for more details. This one's currently available. Asking price, $12,000. So, and lastly, this I happened to cross on Facebook Marketplace maybe about a year ago. And it probably lasted on there about a whole hour before someone swiped it up. And had I had the cash on me, boy, would I have. This is a salvaged original car from Disney's Autopia, a ride that had been run from the 50s that is now no longer. I mean, the ride still exists, but this model doesn't exist. Not a professional writing. This is just Facebook Marketplace ramblings. But there are no motor or wheels. The frame is in good shape. It is currently on jack stands in our backyard, and delivery is not available. When we bought it 20 years ago, our plan was to turn it into a swing, but we never got around to it. First come, first serve for this piece of Disney history. Asking price, $1,600. And I really wonder where they paid for it, because if they were just going to turn it into a swing, I bet you it was that price or even less. But I swear, I found it. It says just added 51 minutes ago. And I think by 2 hours, it was already sold. And then an auction, I actively participated in. This is from last December. I figured if I can't have an Autopia car, I could at least have something from the ride. And back on Heritage Auctions, we had a Disneyland Autopia Do Not Bump sign. Drivers are always ready to race in Tomorrowland's Autopia, but not without a little safety first. Included in this lot is a great Do Not Bump sign displayed at the attraction. Goes into the history of it. The sign comes in an easily recognizable silhouettes and no simple. So, little description. It's the simple sign. It's got two of the Mark 7 Autopia cars. One's ramming the other one out of frame, and it's got the big classic red no sign over it. So I registered to bid on this, and I was like, okay, cool, I can hang this up in my studio. I had a little extra money at the time, and I was bidding on what I thought was way over my budget, and I put a max bid of $280 in. And I think at that point I told myself I wouldn't go over 150. So I went up to 280. It would have been 336 with the buyer's premium. And it sold for $1,680. So more than the actual Autopia car. This item's owner is actively reviewing and typically responding to offers, though not necessarily routinely accepting. Most owners in this category are still actively buying and therefore interested only in offers where they can net after our 10% fee an amount sufficiently above today's market value. Owners in this category seldom counteroffer and will usually simply reject offers placed at current auction values or lower. And the current offer is $2,520. So, hopefully, when the market gets flooded with Honda cars, I'm able to purchase one. But
what did I do with that note?
Something else I found in this maze was the Disneyland Autopia Mark 7 Owners Group. So apparently there's a lot of these cars floating around. This is its own website. This page and group is made for those of us crazy enough to want to own our own Disneyland Autopia car, whether drivable or not. It takes a special kind of insane to want to go through what we did to live out our dreams. And we know there are more of us out there. Raises his hand again. Disneyland made approximately 128 of the cars for Disneyland Park in 1998. The bodies were sold through auction and scattered around the globe. In 1999, I found my car listed on eBay. I promptly bought it and then set out to the valley in my pickup truck to get it. It was a sight to see me driving back to the west side with the body hanging off my truck. I spent the next 6 years researching and getting ready to remake my car so it was drivable. It was a long process, but at the end it worked and I ended up with a 20 mile per hour, which is about 4 to 5 times faster than the actual cars on the ride. Drivable Autopia car. I drove it in parades. I would take my kids for rides around the neighborhood, you name it. Anything to take it out of spin and relive my childhood. These days my kids are in college and don't want to be seen with their geeky dad, so I take rides by myself and cruise the neighborhood. If you live near LAX, you may have seen me driving around on a weekend afternoon. If you have a Autopia car, contact us now. Preferably contact me now, 833-3DL-SHOW. We want to do rallies, parades, events at Disneyland when they eventually reopen. I guess this website hasn't been updated since COVID. Even if your car is not running, you can still be a member. We want you and your obsessive compulsive disorder, ableist. Contact me at the mail address below and let's talk Autopia. And another tab on the site. This one really piques my interest. Rent a Disneyland Autopia Mark 7 car for your next event or party. You can have the incredible Disneyland Autopia Mark 7 appear at your next party or event. Imagine the reaction you'll receive when guests of all ages stare in awe at this magnificent restoration of a classic Disneyland vehicle known as the Motor Trend Autopia car. So, I vote that's what we do at Driveline. We're going to do an event. We're going to hire an Autopia car. And we're going to have a grand old time. So, what else have I been up to in my state of illness post-Hawaii? Last weekend, I managed to crawl out of the house and do this.
Now, live from Encino, California.
The living estate of Leon Motorman Kaplan and his late wife, Eileen. Encino, Grayson, City of Angels welcomes you to the living estate sale of Leon Motorman Kaplan. At the age of 8, Leon was given a motorized bicycle, a Whizzer, and that is when his fascination began with anything powered by a motor of an engine. Leon Motorman Kaplan is known for his automotive radio show on KBC of 40-plus years. Discussing his expertise in engines, motors, and anything powered by them, he began flying in 1970 and continues to be active in aviation. The sale is an eclectic mix of his and her collection. So, you know, I love me a good estate sale. I dropped way too much money in Santa Paula at that firefighter's train and car and whatever else collection. So when I got an ad for this estate sale featuring all sorts of things from an LA staple who I honestly hadn't heard of until that point. Bad, bad car guy, bad, bad radio guy, but highlights from this sale. 1971 Triumph Daytona 500 motorcycle fully restored with a ramp, which asked $6,500 or best offer, an Electra bike Honda, or an Electra bike, comma, Honda Inverter EU1000 generator, Torin Big Ridge shop creeper, Harley and biker items, jacket, shirts, jeans, books, and more. So, I had to do some digging because, as I said, I never heard of this show. I listened to KABC a lot when I started here, when I moved here. But working for the competition, I quickly stopped. But I was always a big KABC fan because I worked for the sister station, WLS in Chicago. And as you know, I worked on my own automotive weekend morning show there. So the Motorman was off of my radar because I was full team Paul Bryan and Drive Chicago. Paul Bryan talks like this. Bad impression. So I did some digging and I wanted to hear what the Motorman was all about. And if you Google the show, the podcast comes up on all platforms and then 404 is when you click on it because I'm sure Cumulus Media deleted the RSS feed, but fear not. I found it on SoundCloud. So there was show episodes posted from 2016 to 2022 on SoundCloud. This was the clip from the earliest episode I was able to find.
Healing your wheels for 35 years. Talk Radio 790 KABC is proud to present the one and only Motorman.
This is so nostalgic because, like, this is literally what all of our imaging at WLS sounded like. And hearing this again, it's like I'm back behind the board there.
John Kaplan.
Hallelujah. That's right, folks. Say hallelujah and welcome to another two power-packed hours of the Motorman program where I talk about, well, everything motorized.
He got 2 hours while we at Drive Chicago only got one.
If it hums, purrs, or moves people. Not only do I like to talk about it, I actually love to talk about it. Yes, I talk about all things motorized. And the numbers to get into the Motorman show where I can help you out. Let me be your second opinion. Anything about buying a car, keeping the old car, whatever it may be. And I do have a question I'll bring up first, but I am the Junkyard Messiah. Yes, I put the romance back into all types of vehicles. And yes, I have a motto. My motto is I have a passion, and really is a big passion, a passion for sharing with you the information that I've accumulated over the last couple of years about motorized things, cars, boats, airplanes. Oh, speaking of airplanes, I had a nice flight yesterday, did a lot of flying. I was off the planet for about 3 hours yesterday, so I'll tell you a little bit about that, and it was quite amazing. It was just nice and beautiful.
So that's a little snippet of the show. This published from Richard Wagoner's column in the Daily News. Craig Reynolds of Pasadena writes to the column, "Enjoy your weekly articles. Might be interesting to do a paragraph on Leon Kaplan and KABC 790 AM Sunday mornings, 8 to 10 AM. He takes calls on all kinds of motorized products and celebrated his 40th anniversary in January." Articles from 2020. He was let go with all the other local talent, but brought back to work for nothing. So yeah, the article goes on to highlight back in 2014, Kaplan was going to leave the station on his own terms because management wanted to shrink the show down to 1 hour to make room for Los Angeles Kings-related programming, but they got to reach an agreement with him to stay on and stay for his full shift. December 2019, They announced all paid weekend hosts would be shown the door in order for the station to make up for years of neglect by cutting unnecessary costs. And the owner, Cumulus Media, believed that on-air talent was an unnecessary cost. But Kaplan decided he could make a go of it by being his own syndicator. He now offers the show to the station for free in exchange for the ability to sell a certain number of advertisements. I think that's actually a good idea for this show. Wonder if I can get Odyssey to buy it. Or not buy it. The time I met Kaplan, he was a genuinely nice guy. His program is the longest-running continuous show on KBC, and Kaplan's down-home style makes his show entertaining and fun to listen to. And I got a couple more clips on him. This is the newest episode I was able to find an archive of. This is from 2022.
Well, good morning again, everyone, and welcome to the Motor Men Show with my son, Lance. Again, son, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
I don't want any more.
I've been saying the same thing for years, son. I got news for you.
I hear you.
You know, same day as Elvis. And,
thank you very much.
And it's my birthday, too, in a way, because it's the 42nd year that I've started here on KABC Radio. The only station. I was national for many years, but still KABC carried the show all along. So this is a show where we talk about all things motorized, electric cars as well. If it hums, purrs, or moves people, we love to talk about it. You know, that's cars and boats and airplanes and motorcycles.
You like to talk about it.
So I bet he didn't talk about trains as much as we do here, though. Plus all those other things.
Patrick, no, yeah. I don't think you do.
I love to talk about it, actually. I really do. I mean, it's just...
It's interesting.
No, it's just... anyway, this show's a... I call it a lifestyle show, not a BS show.
I think he's stealing ideas from this show.
CS show, customer service, and I think, above all, common sense. And we're the happy Motor Men. So give us a call at 1-800-222-KABC.
And give me a call at 833-3DL-SHOW. Now, I need more callers because I want to have moments like this. This is good.
Okay, let's go and speak to Gloria. Gloria's next here. Gloria, Santa Ana, welcome.
Yes, hello.
Oh, boy.
I bought a new battery because my car wouldn't start when it was cold and damp, so I got a new battery.
I mean, that's like... six of my cars.
And then it didn't start again. And the thing is, when I get somebody to help me jump it, it just doesn't jump right away. And I
swear all people of a certain age wind up sounding the same.
Do it again and again and again. And it takes like three times. And then it worked a couple of times. I only drive every Tuesdays and Fridays, and it was okay. And then, sure enough, Friday morning when it was so damp and it was like rain out there and so cold, it wouldn't start again. And the man helped me jump it. He kept saying, "It's not your battery. I said, "Well, it is. It takes several times." And
does it crank and crank and crank before you jump it?
Yeah.
Okay, it's not the battery.
But then nothing happens.
Yeah. Cars that crank usually have good batteries.
Then another man brought me.
Do that again?
Yeah, Gloria. Gloria, what was that noise again? I want to make sure. Maybe that'll help me out.
Well, you know, I turn the key and it goes, but nothing happens.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think it's the battery.
Well, but finally, after four times, it does jump. What does that mean, then?
That means there's something wrong with your engine, and it's not the battery.
Oh, my engine.
I'm getting invested in this now. Gloria, if you're still with us, tell me what happened with the car, 833-3DL-SHOW. I really just wanted to play this clip.
Oh, my engine.
So, what did I buy from the Motor Man? Because I bought a few things and spent more money than I should have. My favorite pieces are the collections of signage and pit garage passes from the inaugural race at the California Speedway, rest in peace, from June 22nd, 1997. It's a couple of signs I got over here. We have California 500 at the California Speedway garage area pass required sign measures about, I'd say, 6 by maybe 15 inches. And then there's another one that matches it. California 500 presented by Napa. I was there, racing California style. It's written in kind of a font that looks like 90s Cherry Coke. So I grabbed both of those. And then I got two with that. Passes that you'd wear from inaugural weekend, June 19th to 22nd, 1997, California 500. Not torn. Still have serial numbers 17 and 18 on them. So I made sure to cop those. Also, I got a plaque that was made out to Leon from the Peterson Gala that was hosted during their 1998 Duesenberg exhibit. A bunch of books, including published copies of Auto Racing Venues in Los Angeles by Harold Osmer, both as the book and as a copy of his graduate thesis from Cal State Northridge. And a hot rod model signed by the motorman himself. It was a bit dirty. Dirty as sin. But I got it cleaned up, and I put some automotive clear coat over the autograph to protect it. It was between that one or a signed 300 SL, but the $20 hot rod was enough for me. So, love a good estate sale. Learned something new. Learned a bit of LA radio history. Congrats to Leon Kaplan, the motorman, for a very successful radio career. Vic will be on an upcoming episode of Driveline to talk about his dad's Camaro, but another lost Camaro was found, and it wasn't my CHP one either. Pitching Camaro, pitching Camaro. I ran over my neighbors. Pitching Camaro. From Haggerty, fresh from my email. 1974 Chevy Camaro fished out of Main Lake after decades underwater. Law enforcement officials in Maine are working on an unusual case. They're trying to determine how a 1974 Chevrolet Camaro ended up at the bottom of Sebago Lake, I think it's called, which is about an hour from Portland. Portland, Maine, not Portland, Oregon. Jason Smith, an underwater explorer, discovered the Camaro about 55 feet below the surface while trying to find a snowmobile that he had spotted on an earlier trip. Footage of the car posted on his Facebook page shows a model Z28 with stripes, a rear spoiler, and trim-specific 15-inch wheels. He didn't go as far as capturing footage of the RPO codes, but were willing to bet the car is finished in light gold metallic. Ran when parked, maybe, Smith alerted the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office, which fished the car out of the lake and started looking for clues. Its license plates were gone. The windows were open and the trunk was empty, with the exception of parts of an old tent, according to Portland-based news channel WGME. Keith Cook, one of the sheriff's office detectives, found a partial VIN and enlisted the help of the Bureau of Motor Vehicles to piece together the full sequence. The BMV is looking for any and all information that might have about the car, though it sounds it hasn't been registered in several decades. The Z28 spent enough time underwater that it crumbled to pieces after a salvage crew pulled it up to the surface. Smith told WGME that they found the Camaro near the middle of the channel separating Fire Island from the mainland, which fueled speculation that it could have fallen off of a ferry, but that theory was quickly ruled out. The team that runs the ferry service told investigators that a car falling off of the boat in the middle of the lake would have made waves, pardon the pun. The incident would have been recorded, the car would have been recovered as quickly as possible, and locals would still be talking about the Camaro that took a bath on its way to Fire Island. It's also too far away from the shore to have been pushed into the water. Most logical explanation is that the Z28 was driven into the lake in the winter and fell through the ice. Casting that light, Smith is lucky he didn't find the driver in the driver's seat. Investigators are hoping that tracking down the owner or relative will help them solve the mystery of the Sebago Camaro. 833-3DL-SHOW. Your voicemails are always welcome.
Hey, this is Eric. I got two questions for you. First question, if you had to pick just one car movie to show to someone, what would it be? And second question, what is the simplest car repair or work you've done on a car that completely escalated and went horribly wrong. I'm talking wiper blade change that goes horribly wrong, oil change and you strip the pan, that kind of thing. Looking forward to seeing you at Classic Burger Car Show. All right, bye.
My best friend Eric, he recently lost his kitty, so our thoughts are with him. But that voicemail, that voicemail I had it sitting on a while, and it might actually be from before I went to Hawaii. But I had to think about that those two questions for a while. We'll start with the project that went awry. And honestly, it's all of them. I mean, I talked with Tim Fabrizzi about my Mercedes overheating that turned into a blown engine. Right now, my E36 BMW that failed smog about a month ago left us stranded with what I think is a bad fuel pump. But I think the best story in all this is my first real car project I ever did. And this goes back to before I moved to Los Angeles. This was back at home outside of Chicago, and it wasn't even my car. So the car was a 2007 BMW 550 M Sport. Now, this car holds special meaning to me because they have something they talk about a lot on Spike's Car Radio, which is your taproot car. And your taproot car is a car you had early on, and it might not have been your forever car, but it turned you into the car person you are today. And this car was that for me. It belonged to my friend Diana's dad. Thing leaked oil like a mother. I made a deal with him to do some work on it in exchange for getting to use the car. So BMWs were always kind of like a joke to me. Back in high school and stuff, I was all about American cars, muscle cars, you know, everything a Midwesterner values. And back then, BMWs, as you remember, were the chosen car of dicks. They've since moved on to EVs and primarily Teslas, but BMWs were kind of a joke. But I wanted to try one out. I thought it was a good looking car, and I wanted to get into wrenching. So, the car, I borrowed it from Diana's dad. We drove it over to my house. I stored it there for a whole summer. I think it was at our house, much to my family's dismay, for about 4 months. And about half that time, it wasn't even drivable. So, I was tasked with changing the valve cover gaskets because it was our understanding that that was where a majority of the oil leaks were coming from, although, to be honest, they were coming from everywhere. I mean, that car had a goddamn oil gasket under the alternator, and that was leaking terribly. Like, the whole thing was coated in oil. You took the plate off of the bottom of the car. It was just soaked, but I thought I could handle changing all the gaskets on this German performance car. There used to be a parts supplier that was out called Bavarian Autosport. They've since been bought out. But they had a great YouTube channel with a guy, and he'd walk you through just about every kind of repair you want to make on a BMW. He did valve cover gaskets. He did work on the Vano system, work on the heads and stuff, tune-ups. Great, great YouTube channel, and thankfully those videos are still available if you know where to dig. But I went. I ordered the parts from them. I had everything I needed, and I watched the video a few times, and I was ready for this to be a cakewalk. But the car he was working on was a straight six, which BMWs are famous for, but the 550 had a V8. And I could not for the life of me get the valve covers to clear the shock towers enough to come off. So I had all the bolts out. I'm ready to pull the cover out, and it's just hitting everything. And supposedly, the only way to get these valve covers off, which I didn't realize, was to take the front of the car off, undo the engine mounts, and slide the engine forward enough for the valve covers to clear. I may be wrong, BMW mechanics listening, correct me, but it appeared the only way to get those covers off was the engine moving in some way, shape, or form. So, in the process, just about every plastic ventilation hose that I touched on that car crumbled to bits. I mean, and they're notorious for this. So, like, the car was getting more and more broken the more I worked on it. Like, if there's point A and B on this repair, I was at, like, point negative omega. Like, I was destroying this thing. And it's a shame because that car grew on me so fast. I mean, this was the time I was trying to start a YouTube channel, so I recorded some long-lost videos of me trying to work on this car. I was gonna record some reviews of it, and I did some other projects with it too. I wet sanded the headlights and stuff. I remember the reverse lights were out, and I replaced those on it. So I was doing all these little projects on this car, trying to make it more drivable. And but man, did I really, really like the way this car drove? Like I said, I had it for. It was the summer I graduated. Yes, it was the summer I graduated, and I just remember Walk the Moon had the number one hit on the radio, and it was summer, and I was driving this car everywhere. I probably put hundreds of miles on it in the time I had it. But man, like, in all honesty, it wasn't really well taken care of. I remember the cords were showing on the tires. Sometimes it made weird smells. It was doing all the BMW chimes. It had that horrible, very early iDrive system that Jeremy Clarkson ripped to shreds on Top Gear. But I really like this car. I mean, I was taking it out with friends. I took it to meet one of my former classmates for Chipotle. Something I fumbled greatly and still haunts me to this day. But great car. And ultimately, made me buy my BMW, which I've had now for 11 years, as a graduation gift for myself. So, BMW 550i M Sport, very special car for me. I really like the E60 generation, Bengal-styled BMW 5 Series. Would totally consider buying another one. Hopefully a 528, so it has my bulletproof BMW 2.8 liter straight six. But so that is probably the most critical in my life car project that was supposed to be easy and couldn't have gone worse. I wound up admitting defeat and returning the car to my friend Diana's dad, and it was subsequently sold on Craigslist. I wanted to buy it for myself, but he wanted $10,000 for it. I'm sure I can get one now for maybe $1,000. I'm pretty sure it had like 140,000 miles on it too. 150, I think. I don't know. So, there's that. Now, the one car movie, I thought about this a lot too, that I want to show to someone. There's a lot of generic answers I can give that a lot of generic host would give you, and they'd be like, yo man, you gotta watch the Cannonball Run, or you gotta watch Steve McQueen and Bullet, and you gotta watch bloody Fast and Furious 4. Like, no, I'm going to recommend a movie that I'm pretty sure, unless I showed it to you, no one has ever seen. And I only found out about this movie because shortly after I bought my first collector car, my Rolls-Royce, back in 2018, I was deep, deep, deep into Rolls-Royce YouTube, and I found this old BBC video from 1995. It was a series called The Car's the Star, and they did one on the Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud. And this YouTube, this video is something of itself to watch. A lot of severely canceled celebrities interviewed on that about their love for the Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud. But it featured this clip that turned me on to this movie. So basically we see a guy and he's driving a Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud down a dirt road behind a group of bicyclists, and he's taunting them with his horn. So he pulls up next to the guy and he turns and he looks at him, and then He kind of darts at him a little bit and runs this bicyclist off the road. And that movie is known as The Fast Lady, which is shown on the screen. And up to that point, I thought The Fast Lady was the Silver Cloud in the clip, but it is not. So, what is The Fast Lady? The Fast Lady, 1962 British comedy film directed by Ken Annakin and starring James Robertson Justice. He was the one driving the Rolls Royce. Leslie Phillips, Stanley Baxter, Kathleen Harrison, and Julie Christie. Screenplay was by Henry Blyth and Jack Davies, based on the 1925 novel The Fast Lady by Keble Howard. It is the third in a trilogy of comedies written by Jack Davies that Anakin made for Independent Artist Films. The plot. Murdoch Troon is a proud Scot living and working for a local government authority somewhere in South London. A shy young man, his main excitement comes from cycling. After he is forced off the road by an impatient car driver, he tracks down the owner, only to find that he is Commander Charles Chingford, the domineering and acerbic owner of a sports car distributorship.
What is all this about? I happen to be the cyclist you tried to murder last Sunday afternoon.
I don't know what you're moaning about, but since I see only the backsides of cyclists when I'm driving, I can hardly be expected to recognize their faces.
I've got 22 witnesses, and unless you're prepared to settle this account, I intend to summons you for contravening the Motor Vehicles and Road Traffic Acts of 1930 and 1934.
Don't you quote the Road Traffic Act at me. I remember the incident perfectly. You deliberately obstructed me. I shall consult my lawyers. Follow me.
Chingford reluctantly pays for the damage to Murdoch's cycle, but more significantly, Murdoch meets Claire, Chingford's beautiful blonde daughter, and is smitten with her.
Good for you. The old man's always bossing people around.
But I don't like the sound of those lawyers.
Don't you worry. They'll make him pay up. They always do. I'm Claire Chingford. Come and have a drink.
So she tells him she loves sports cars and she would love to have one, but her great dictator, meaning her father, won't allow it. She does drive a very awesome bright red Mini Cooper in the show, in the movie, though, which is... It's a great car movie all around, especially if you like British cars. Despite not being able to drive, Murdoch is talked into buying a car to impress her by his friend and fellow lodger, Freddie Fox, a used car salesman and, quote, serial cad.
Why didn't you turn that game in? I refuse to be driven off the road by you motorists. Buy yourself a decent car. Get yourself a girl. This one's for sale.
So, by the way, there's a scantily clad woman in the car kind of waving from it.
Possibly a bit on the far side, but she's on very modern lines. Smashing upholstery. She's a real bargain.
What a suggestion.
Other sales points include an ample rear boot, loose covers, and automatic clutch. Leaving plenty of room for fancy knee work.
Yeah, he's not talking about the car. Murdoch has his first driving lesson in a less exciting car, an Austin A40 Farina, which proves to be a comedy of disasters when, with nervous instructor Wentworth, Freddie then makes a deal with Murdoch and offers to teach him, but the results are equally disastrous. Freddie sees a chance to invigorate himself with Chingford and also sell Murdoch a car. The car is a 1927 vintage Bentley 4.5-liter red label speed model, painted in British racing green and named the Fast Lady.
Hey, do you want with me, Freddie?
Oh, yes. I've just been talking to Ken Kingscombe up at the driving school.
Oh?
Yes, he thinks you're a born driver. He reckons if you had a car of your own, you'd pass the test in a week.
Oh, you're just trying to get me into buying this.
What a rotten suggestion. Anyway, I couldn't, even if you wanted me to.
Oh? And why not?
Practically solo this afternoon. Titled chap. Tell you what, though, there's a very nice little saloon car up at the showroom.
I'm not interested in saloons. What's he offered you for it?
Offer for what? Oh, this. Only 475.
By the way, that's 475 pounds. Not 1,000. Pounds.
475? Pounds?
Mm. Pounds.
That's an awful lot of money.
Well, I would say you can't take it with you. So you might as well drive it there.
Have you accepted his offer?
Yes, of course. Well, as good as. God, it's a giveaway at that price.
So naturally, none of this is true. He's trying to twist his arm because his boss said he's fired if he doesn't sell this car by the end of the week. And then he said, I take you up on that challenge. I think I have a sucker who's going to buy it.
A giveaway. I got bills here for £400 spent on the engine alone. Look at these tires. Marvelous. Have you ever seen leather work on a modern sports car like this? Never. As Claire Chingers said the other day, it's one of the most beautiful Bentleys ever made.
She said that to me, too.
Getting into his head.
Well, I better get back to the showrooms. That title chap is coming in to settle the deal. 7 o'clock.
If you were to get a major offer of 500, would you take it?
What? I couldn't do a thing like that. We car salesmen have a code of honor, you know.
Pity.
Mind you, if it was somebody I could trust, somebody who'd love, honor, and cherish the old girl. It's no good. I'm a sentimental old fool. I've no business in the motor trade. It's yours for £500.
Lucky bastard.
Credit or crack?
Oh, cash, naturally. I'm not paying out interest to any English moneylender.
Congratulations.
Racist.
Oh, well, I haven't actually
What's
made...
What's more, up. I guarantee to teach the driver. In next to no time, you'll be roaring up to Claire's house like a knight on a white charger.
Oh, a green charger.
Yes, exactly. Come on, let's go inside and settle this deal before I change my mind. That title chap is going to be furious.
So unwilling to give up and determined to prove his love for Claire, Murdoch bets her father that he can drive the car. An experienced racing driver, Chingford is convinced that Murdoch has no hope in achieving this and bets him he cannot. I will not spoil the rest. It's a good, funny movie. It's silly. If you like old British humor, it's good. It's a movie you don't really have to pay attention hard to. Enjoy it with a cocktail or smoking a doob or whatever you do, and it's a good watch. But not only is this a movie that I like to show people, naturally, it's never good enough for me to just enjoy a film. I want to buy the car, too. And I did track it down. Star of the Fast Lady film sells at Collectibles Fair. The famous 4.5-liter Bentley changes hands for 550 pounds. No, wait. 550,000 pounds. This was in 2010. At Masterpiece Fair. Imagine the rate of return you can get if you bought that car for 500 pounds and then sold it for 100,000 times more. Or 1,000 times more. In the movie, the 4.5-liter Bentley plays a pivotal, not to say racy, role in the romance between Claire, played by Julie Christie and making her film debut, and Troon, Stanley Baxter, alongside James Robertson Justice and serial cad Leslie Phillips. At the weekend in the slower surroundings of the Masterpiece Fair at Chelsea Barracks, an unnamed British collector paid the asking price for the 1927 car after Leslie Phillips himself turned up to pose for pictures with his former acting partner. The collector was delighted to have walked away with such a major piece of movie history and was heard to say that three generations of his family were united in their enthusiasm both for the film and the excitement of owning the star of the show, said spokesperson for a Masterpiece. A fair showcasing unique fusion of antique and contemporary when spanning objects from around the world ranging from wine to jewelry and cars. The Bentley is an original Vandenplas fabric-bodied short chassis red label speed model and was bought in 1959 by independent artist to star in The Fast Lady, directed by Ken Anakin of Those Magnificent Men and Their Flying Machines fame. So if you like that movie, you'll like this one. The fair, which includes stands by Fiskins, which sold the Bentley, and auctioneers Coys, also featured lectures on furniture, art, and antiques. And it was visited by Sir Michael Caine, Roger Moore, Julian Lennon, and Jasper Conran. Sounds like a fun event. The Masterpiece Fair, which is to become an annual event, closed on Tuesday and was claimed to have included more than 1 billion pounds worth of valuable objects. So, yeah, fun little event. Maybe I'll go to it sometime. Quick Google search. Masterpiece London was a premier annual multidisciplinary art fair held in the Royal Hospital Chelsea, London, renowned for showcasing high-end art, antiques, design, and jewelry ranging from antiquity to contemporary. Founded in 2010, it featured over 140 international exhibitors and was a staple of London's summer season before its cancellation. Oh, well. So, yeah. Owner of the car remained anonymous, but they seem to really like it, and it'll probably be quite some time before I'm able to buy it, but that's good, because I know I need to save up at least $750,000 to do so. But, yeah, Fast Lady, my recommended movie, never released on Region 1 DVD, not available on any streaming service unless you use a VPN and hit up Netflix, but readily available on YouTube, and there's a good copy on the Internet Archive, which is where I got mine. A couple production notes. Save the date, Justin's unnamed birthday bash, Saturday, November 7th. I know it's 6 months out, but figured I'd start planning this now because it's going to be the first real event I ever throw. And I need to make sure it goes perfectly and I have money saved up. So November 7th, still need suggestions for a venue. If anyone knows of any, send me a DM. All I know is there's going to be a car show. There'll be some tacos, some sort of variety of live music, and...
Well, it's all for charity, so what's the difference?
Hopefully I'll find a nonprofit to partner with, because here in the Driveline community, we are all about doing good. So look out for that. But that does it for this week. Speaking of saving money, as costs of this show are surprisingly very expensive, I started a Buy Me a Coffee, buymeacoffee.com/driveline, to leave me a little tip until this show starts bringing in the big bucks. Vote for Lizzie and support LAFD Foundation, drivelineshow.com, and click Vote for Lizzie. Leave your questions on the voicemail, 833-3DL-SHOW. Follow along all week on Instagram at Driveline Show or my personal at JustBack, JustBac. And bye-bye now.
Oh, my engine.